Hello, everyone out there. This is Mike Lindell of MyPillow, and I would love for you all getting involved to support Brandon Stations and his network. If you use the promo code WVW, you can save up to 66% off all my products at MyPillow.com, and half the proceeds are going to go to support his great network. Thank you.
WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present the Pry Report with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Dr. Pry was an intelligence officer with the Central Intelligence Agency and was responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy, operational plans, military doctrine, threat perceptions, and developing U.S. paradigms for strategic warning. Dr. Pry is executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, a congressional advisory board dedicated to achieving protection of the United States from electromagnetic pulse, cyber warfare, mass destruction terrorism, and other threats to civilian critical infrastructures. Dr. Pry has also served on the staffs of several congressional commissions. Due to his expertise, he's been a guest on numerous national and international radio and television programs, such as Life, Liberty, and Levin, with host Mark Levin on the Fox News Channel, Lou Dobbs Tonight on Fox Business, and the BBC made his book War Scare into a two-hour TV documentary, and his book Electric Armageddon was the basis for a TV documentary by National Geographic. Dr. Pry has written numerous books on national security that include Blackout Wars, Apocalypse Unknown, Electric Armageddon, and War Scare, Russia and America on the Nuclear Brink. And now, here is your host, Dr. Peter Pry.
Welcome to another edition of the Pry Report, where our focus is on national security issues. I want to talk to you about Sputnik today, because our nation is experiencing, I believe, another Sputnik moment. And many of you probably may have not even heard of Sputnik, as I learned recently. People aren't being taught about it in school. Well, in 1957, I was only 3 years old, but distinctly remember standing in the front yard of my grandmother's house with my parents, brothers, and cousins, all of us gazing at the night sky, fascinated and terrified as the world's first satellite passed overhead among the stars. It was the USSR's Sputnik in 1957. Today, it's still controversial whether Sputnik could be seen with the naked eye. Some argue what was seen was the large booster that orbited both the little satellite and the booster itself went into orbit. And the booster followed Sputnik across the sky. So some scientists think that we didn't actually see Sputnik, but the booster. On the other hand, other scientists claim that, yeah, you could see the satellite, even though it was really small, because it was made of polished, highly reflective metal. In any case, Sputnik is unimpressive by today's standards. It was just a small, polished metal sphere, about 23 inches in diameter, so like a beach ball, you know, about 2 feet in diameter. And it carried batteries for radio transmissions from four projecting antennae. Sputnik orbited 4 months before burning up on reentry. Nonetheless, in those much wiser days, the Eisenhower administration and congressional Democrats and Republicans alike correctly interpreted Sputnik as a national security emergency. U.S. political and military leaders on both sides of the political aisle, most of whom had witnessed or survived the technological wonder weapons of World War II, immediately understood that Sputnik foreshadowed a military revolution of intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs, that could deliver against the United States a nuclear Pearl Harbor. In other words, they saw and understood that Sputnik meant the ICBM was coming. The ICBM hadn't been invented yet, my friends. The entire nation united behind crash programs to catch up with the Russians in space and missile technology, including massive investment in education and expansion of colleges and universities to produce scientists, engineers, and mathematicians, while families were encouraged to build nuclear bomb shelters, and children, including me, practiced duck and cover exercises in school. John F. Kennedy ran for president, promising to close the missile gap with Russia, for which he would be mocked by future liberal historians and anti-nuclear activists. As the USSR had only 4 ICBMs in 1961. But Kennedy was right, and the liberal historians and anti-nuclear activists were wrong. Kennedy was right. Nikita Khrushchev was, in the Soviet dictator's own words, churning out missiles like sausages. Khrushchev built 700 intermediate-range ballistic missiles and medium-range ballistic missiles to target NATO Europe, and had a vast superiority over the U.S. in nuclear-armed missiles in the European theater. That, in Europe, is where Moscow thought a nuclear World War III would be fought, not intercontinentally. So President Kennedy built a vast superiority, while the Soviets had a vast superiority over us in Europe. In terms of their nuclear missiles, President Kennedy built a vast superiority over the USSR in intercontinental missiles. We had 170 of them by the October 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. And this decisive advantage in nuclear firepower, along with our superiority in strategic bombers and missile submarines, enabled Kennedy to prevail peacefully during the Cuban Missile Crisis, averting a global thermonuclear holocaust. Now, fast forward to today so you can understand why I'm talking about Sputnik in 1957 and the national response to Sputnik in 1957. In August of this year, China tested a space superweapon demonstrating a fractional orbital bombardment system that orbited around the Earth a hypersonic glide vehicle. And the hypersonic glide vehicle deorbited to simulate an attack on a terrestrial target. This is the first time any nation has combined these technologies, which have revolutionary implications, enabling EMP, nuclear, or possibly even conventional attacks against any target on Earth in 45 minutes or less with little or no warning. U.S. intelligence and defense officials were taken by surprise. Quote, "We had no idea China could do this," according to a senior intelligence officer, reflecting the views of a shocked intelligence and defense community in the United States and worldwide, as reported by Financial Times that broke the story about China's space superweapon on 16 October 2021. 16 October 2021, coincidentally, during the 59th anniversary of the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. Defense and intelligence community professionals almost universally acknowledge China's test of the FOBS HGV combination, that is a fractional orbital bombardment system, hypersonic glide vehicle combination, maybe I'll just call it a space superweapon, is a major threat, potentially a game changer, with even JCS Chairman Mark Milley likening the test to Sputnik. Even that dummy, the Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the one who said he'd warn China if we planned to attack them. Even that dummy understands that China's test of the space superweapon is equivalent to Sputnik. In fact, Milley is wrong, because this threat, China's space superweapon, is actually a much bigger threat than Sputnik. Sputnik merely foreshadowed a new era in military technology, whereas China's new space weapon is in fact a full-blown new revolutionary space weapon. As former senior defense official Director Mark Schneider warns, quote, I'm quoting Schneider, another important aspect of such a weapon, China's space superweapon, is its potential to launch a surprise nuclear EMP attack. Such an attack would be devastating. This is now a demonstrated capability that does not require the use of an ICBM, an SLBM, or any other type of ballistic missile. This has critical implications for attack warning. And as I warned in an earlier article, I'm quoting myself now, a FOBS warhead could make a surprise nuclear electromagnetic pulse attack, paralyzing U.S. electric grids, communications, and potentially military command, control, communications, intelligence, and U.S. nuclear retaliatory forces, thereby winning a nuclear war with a single blow. I wrote that in a recent article called China's New Superweapon Exploits U.S. Blind Spot, published by the Center for Security Policy, on 20 October 2021. China's space superweapon is the latest in a long series of technological surprises that have profound implications for U.S. and global security. For example, hypersonic glide vehicles. Russia and China are far ahead of the U.S. in development and deployment of hypersonic glide vehicles that can fly below radar at supersonic speeds, can outmaneuver missile defenses. Supersonic speeds, some of these hypersonic glide vehicles like Russia can travel 25 times the speed of sound. They can outmaneuver missile defenses. They have pinpoint accuracy and are ideally suited for surprise attack. Russia is developing nuclear-armed hypersonic warheads for delivery by a wide variety of means, including ICBMs, aircraft, ships, submarines, and space weapons, fractional orbital bombardment system. China has conducted hundreds of hypersonic warhead tests versus only 9 tests by the United States. We've only conducted 9 of these tests, and China's conducted hundreds of tests of hypersonic warheads. And this is according to the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General John Hyten, who's a good man, unlike Chairman Mark Miley. Super MP is another Sputnik technological threat, revolutionary technological threat. Russia, China, and probably North Korea have developed super EMP weapons deliverable by satellite, missile, or hypersonic warhead that can generate extraordinarily powerful EMP fields of 100 kilovolts per more. That's 100,000 volts per meter or more, greatly exceeding the U.S. military EMP hardening standard, which is only 50,000 volts per meter. 50,000 volts versus 100,000 volts or more. China is developing a non-nuclear EMP weapon for delivery by hypersonic warhead. The Blue Ribbon Congressional EMP Commission warned, quote, I'm quoting now, foreign adversaries may aptly consider nuclear EMP attack a weapon that can gravely damage the U.S. by striking at its technological Achilles heel without having to confront the U.S. military. This kind of an attack can render traditional armies, navies, and air forces obsolete. First strike ICBMs. There's another technological breakthrough like Sputnik that we're facing. Although multiple warhead ICBMs capable of destroying multiple targets are not new technologically, the U.S. decision to demerv its ICBMs, in other words, we took off the multiple warheads off our ICBMs, so every one of our ICBMs only carries one warhead now, and we reduced the number of our ICBMs to just 400 in 400 silos under the new START treaty. This has created an unprecedented opportunity for a successful first strike by Russia or China. China's deployment of its DF-41 ICBM in large numbers is a technological and strategic surprise. The DF-41 has yield accuracy combination to achieve over a 90% single shot kill probability against U.S. ICBM silos. And each DF-41 ICBM carries 10 warheads. So that means each of China's DF-41 ICBMs with 10 warheads, just one of their missiles can kill 10 of ours. China's surprise rapid expansion of its ICBM force to perhaps 400 DF-41s in a few years would give China 4,000 warheads on the DF-41 ICBM alone. This would give China a 10-to-1 advantage over the United States in ICBM warheads and nearly 3-to-1 advantage over all U.S. strategic nuclear weapons on all U.S. ICBMs, submarines, and bombers. And Russia's equally ambitious strategic nuclear programs, combined with Russia's likely cheating on New START, will give Moscow an even greater advantage and capabilities that are even greater than China's to realize the Russian General Staff's nuclear war winning strategy. And last, I'm just giving you examples here. Artificial intelligence is a new technological revolution. It's a new technological military revolution and that we're not doing anything much about. Russia reportedly is incorporating artificial intelligence to improve capabilities of both defensive anti-missile and anti-air systems and offensive nuclear systems. Russia's Poseidon is an artificially intelligent nuclear-powered torpedo or fully autonomous submarine armed with the world's most powerful nuclear warhead, 100 megatons. if used to hunt and kill U.S. missile submarines on patrol. Poseidon alone would be a game changer by threatening the most survivable U.S. nuclear deterrent, our submarines. And it would make any U.S. plans to reduce our triad of bombers and ICBMs and submarines to a monad of missile submarines. This would be suicidal in a world where Russia is deploying Poseidon. Yet that's what the Biden administration might do. They might get rid of our ICBMs and our bombers and just rely on submarines, even though Russia is deploying this artificially intelligent torpedo or submarine armed with a 100-megaton warhead, you know, that would be dedicated to sinking our submarines. China and Russia will both probably harness artificial intelligence to make the oceans transparent so U.S. missile submarines can be located and destroyed by multiple means. China also reportedly is using artificial intelligence to further improve the accuracy of hypersonic warheads. Artificial intelligence could also be the key to a revolutionary new way of warfare focused on cyber attacking electric grids and critical infrastructures that would make traditional warfare obsolete. If you can make an EMP and cyber attack, you know, that's enhanced by artificial intelligence to black out the national electric grid, you don't even need to fight a traditional war. You've already won. And the Defense Department's first software chief, a guy named Nicholas Chalon, recently quit because allegedly the U.S. has already lost the artificial intelligence war with China. And I'm quoting Nicholas Chalon, who until recently was the Pentagon's top guy on artificial intelligence. According to Chalon, quote, "We have no competing fighting chance against China in 15 to 20 years. Right now, it is already a done deal. It is already over." Now, the point of all this, you're, you know, racking up what I'm just talking about, you know, hypersonic warheads, first strike ICBMs, super EMP weapons, artificial intelligence. The U.S. is facing multiple revolutionary technological existential threats that could overturn the balance of strategic power, defeat nuclear deterrence, and tempt China or Russia or both to launch World War III. We are far beyond a Sputnik moment, yet Washington is divided on how and divided even on whether to respond. You know, what I'm doing here is I'm comparing our wise and intelligence response to Sputnik originally in 1957, where we moved all out to seize the technological future, with today, when Washington is arguing about whether we should even do anything. Why are they arguing about whether even to do anything? Well, let me talk about what I call the anti-nuclear media complex. Washington is not reacting intelligently and prudently to the current crisis by mobilizing to dominate the technological future as it did in 1957. Today, Washington is deeply divided and polarized between the defense and intelligence communities and independent analysts and their usually conservative political supporters. This group on one side is often derided by their opponents, their liberal left-wing opponents, as the military-industrial complex. That's on one side, the defense and intelligence communities, independent analysts, and their usually conservative political supporters. On the other side, it's the anti-nuclear and arms control communities, university academics, usually leftist politicians, and biased mass media. And this we might call the anti-nuclear media complex. We are always hearing all the time from the left, mainstream media, about the military-industrial complex, but we never hear about this other thing, which is the left-wing counterpart to it, the anti-nuclear media complex. And unfortunately, the latter, the anti-nuclear media complex, is in the driver's seat in Washington. And they are in the driver's seat in the Biden administration. They are in the driver's seat in Congress, and they are in the driver's seat in the Democratic Party. The anti-nuclear media complex is overrepresented out of all proportion to their numbers in the general population because of a sympathetic media megaphone. Members of the anti-nuclear media complex typically lack experience working in the defense or intelligence communities. They are often ignorant of the issues on which they have opinions. They make many errors of fact and errors of analysis. These guys propound Russian and Chinese propaganda and offer it up as fact. The anti-nuclear media complex not infrequently belong to organizations originally founded as fronts for disinformation by Soviet intelligence agencies, yet their opinions dominate the press. The anti-nuclear media complex is always quick with their non-expert opinions to dismiss, lowball, or belittle every new nuclear threat from China, Russia, and North Korea, and to oppose every U.S. nuclear modernization program. For example, STRATCOM Commander Admiral Charles Richard gets far less ink than the Middlebury Institute's Jeffrey Lewis, you know, a political scientist who knows nothing about nuclear weapons and strategy, but they're always quoting Jeffrey Lewis in the press, much more so than a real expert like Admiral Charles Richard, Commander STRATCOM, and this may prove fatal to the nation. Lewis, who knows nothing about EMP, once laughingly mocked former CIA Director R. James Woolsey for correctly warning national public radio listeners that North Korea could make an EMP attack on the United States. NPR, responding to complaints about Lewis's unprofessionalism and erroneous dismissal of Woolsey, launched a fake investigation that ignored the EMP commission and the evidence proving Woolsey was right. NPR, in effect, lied to its listeners about the North Korean EMP threat, and this happens all the time. I mean, here's some other examples of what's just going on just recently in terms of the reaction of the left, of what I call the anti-nuclear media complex, to the China's new space superweapon. Kyle Mizukami is not an expert on EMP or space weapons, but he gets to misinform the public about both the pages of Popular Science quite regularly. On October 20, he wrote, quote, if China does deploy a FOBS system, it changes little for the security of the United States. Nuclear deterrence still means any state foolish enough to launch a surprise attack on the U.S. would commit national suicide. Yet the whole point of the FOBS is to defeat U.S. nuclear deterrence, including by a surprise EMP attack that could paralyze U.S. retaliatory forces. David Sanger in the New York Times suggests that China's space superweapon is propaganda from the U.S. military-industrial complex that wants a new Cold War instead of cooperation with Communist China on COVID-19 and climate change. I'm quoting David Sanger now from the New York Times. Governments that plunge into a Cold War mindset can exaggerate every conflict, convinced that they are part of a larger struggle. They can miss opportunities for cooperation, as the United States and China did in battling COVID-19. Can you believe that? Sanger claims that we cooperated in battling COVID-19 and may yet on the climate. In other words, don't worry about that space superweapon that China just tested in August. It's far more important that we cooperate with China on COVID-19 and in combating climate change. Daniel Dresner in the Washington Post suspects China's space superweapon is a conspiracy by the Pentagon and Republican congressional staffers who, according to Dresner, sound pretty hawkish, to derail President Biden's plans to cut modernization of the U.S. nuclear deterrent. Dresner accuses Republican staffers, here he says, I'm quoting him, Cold Wars can also incentivize hawks to use well-timed leaks to undercut dovish members of a foreign policy team. In other words, pay no attention to China's test of that space superweapon. This is, we shouldn't be focusing on that. You know, they want you to focus on that because this is undercutting our plans to dismantle the U.S. nuclear deterrent and reduce the U.S. nuclear deterrent. CNN's Natasha Bertrand likewise thinks the enemy is us. Recently reporting, I'm quoting Bertrand, China's test of a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile has given new fuel to critics of President Joe Biden's ambitious agenda to scale back America's nuclear arsenal. News of the launch is coming to light publicly as the administration nears the end of its nuclear posture review. Biden's national security team has been working toward a policy of increased restraint and more limited spending on nuclear modernization and production. In other words, you know, the CNN and Natasha Bertrand also think that the important thing is not that China has tested a space superweapon, but that the timing of the leak of the information about the space superweapon might inconvenience Biden, embarrass the Biden administration, because Natasha Bertrand clearly is more interested in having the U.S. engage in unilateral nuclear disarmament than it is in responding to China's test of a space superweapon. It'll do no good, but let's try appealing to reason. You know, let's try appealing to reason here. The threat to the United States is not from the Pentagon, and it is not from Republican congressional staffers. The threat to the United States is from China and Russia's new nuclear superweapons. Both parties understood that. Washington, to a man, understood that in 1957 in responding to Sputnik. That we don't understand that today. Washington is divided, you know, between people who care about the defense of the United States and people who see the United States as the bad guy and want to, and are much more interested in disarming the U.S. nuclear deterrent than they are in responding to nuclear threats from Russia and China. I'm going to give a quote here at Lent, from an anonymous high-ranking defense expert who gave this quote to me, but he's afraid of being fired. And so I promised to keep him anonymous. But this guy is a person I really respect. You know, unfortunately, he's the freedom of speech does not apply to people anymore. They can get punished for their politically incorrect views. But he basically says, I'm not going to give the entire quote, but the real agenda behind both China and Russia working on hypersonic warheads and fractional orbital bombardment systems is that they are destabilizing first strike weapons, something Western narrative-driven media and arms control zealots usually fail to mention, since the West is always at fault, not Russia or China. So not everybody is crazy. So what can we do? You know, what can we do to respond to these threats? You know, because the introduction by China, Russia, and even North Korea of super space weapons and hypersonic warheads threatens to destroy the foundations of nuclear deterrence. This is indeed another Sputnik moment that should mobilize an emergency national response as the original Sputnik did in 1957. Because of the politics of our age, because Washington has gone retarded, you know, Washington isn't as wise as it used to be. Washington is divided politically between people who do care about our national security and are smart enough to see the threat, but these people aren't the ones in power. The ones in power are these fools that I've been talking about. You know, we've got this ship of fools in power, you know, people who don't really know what they're talking about, but have are so anti-US and anti-nuclear weapon. You know, they think the nuclear weapons themselves are more dangerous than Russia, China, or North Korea, even U.S. nuclear weapons. And since they can't control the nuclear arsenals of Russia, China, and North Korea, but they can control the U.S. nuclear arsenal, they're going to set a good example by disarming the United States. I'm afraid that's where we may be going in the nuclear posture review. Unfortunately, the Biden administration appears cowed by or co-conspirating with the anti-nuclear media complex. The Biden administration is determined to use the nuclear posture review, in CNN's words, to scale back America's nuclear arsenal, at least according to CNN. the Biden administration might get rid of our ICBMs, get rid of our nuclear bombers, and cut in half the number of our ballistic missile submarines to just 6 missile submarines so that we have a posture of minimum deterrence. The anti-nuclear media complex thinks none of the revolutionary nuclear threats that I've been just talking about here matter, nor do any of the complex technologies or strategic calculations matter. Because, as President Biden said in Geneva, a nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought. A nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought. What? Wasn't nuclear World War II a nuclear war? And didn't the United States win it? Russia and China and North Korea, by their preparations, clearly demonstrate that they think a nuclear war can be won, and they're planning to fight one. Just as British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain thought World War II was impossible because, quote, the bomber will always get through, so too the anti-nuclear media complex has blind faith in the efficacy of minimum deterrence. They think that just as long as we have a handful of nuclear weapons, that's enough, and nobody will attack us. At best, the new nuclear posture review will permit present U.S. nuclear modernization programs to continue. These programs, inherited from the Obama administration, will prove as inadequate to the future technological challenge as the B-29 bomber was to Sputnik. Since the Biden administration has continued President Trump's executive order on coordinating national resilience to electromagnetic pulses, perhaps the Biden administration can be persuaded to launch a crash program hardening U.S. strategic forces, hardening U.S. command and control, hardening electric grids and other civilian critical infrastructures against EMP. This would address one of the worst threats posed by space weapons and hypersonic warheads. Passive defense of U.S. critical infrastructures against EMP and cyber warfare should not be philosophically or politically objectionable to the anti-nuclear media complex. Perhaps our last best hope is space-based missile defense, which can render nuclear missiles obsolete and defeat these new space weapons and hypersonic warheads and protect America from being attacked with EMP in the first place. Ambassador Henry Cooper, former director of the Strategic Defense Initiative, estimates that Brilliant Pebble's space-based defenses can be resurrected and deployed in just 5 years for $20 billion. That is quick and inexpensive by today's standards. Alas, Star Wars is vehemently opposed by Russia, China, North Korea, and the American anti-nuclear media complex. As the consequences of U.S. strategic inferiority and vulnerability become increasingly clear, likely leading to adversary aggression and unraveling of U.S. alliances, even the Biden administration in the anti-nuclear media complex may awaken to reality. In other words, as they start to see the consequences of our strategic inferiority leading us toward World War III, maybe even these dummies will finally wake up. The way, after all, look at how General Milley woke up, that dummy who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Even he appreciates that China's test of a space superweapon is a scary thing and likened it to Sputnik. So maybe not all hope is lost that that our adversaries on the left, the American left, will wake up before it's too late. Maybe someday soon even CNN will realize that Star Wars is the best possible anti-nuclear strategy. And to become President Star Wars Biden would be the best possible legacy, to succeed where President Reagan failed by slaying the nuclear dragon and stilling the ghosts of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Thank you for another edition, listening to another edition of the Pry Report. I've far overstayed my stay, but God bless you. And God save the United States of America.
Hello, everyone out there. This is Mike Lindell of MyPillow, and I would love for you all getting involved to support Brandon Stations and his network. If you use the promo code WVW, you can save up to 66% off all my products at MyPillow.com, and half the proceeds are going to go to support his great network. Thank you.